Hello guys, Jack here from Jack Makes Happy Hour podcast, and yes, the rumours are true, we're heading back out on tour in May 2024. 68% of the tickets are already sold out, but there are still a few left at Edinburgh, Newcastle, Manchester, Birmingham, Leeds, Cardiff, Sheffield, Nottingham, Bristol, Bury and our home city of Norwich. So, don't waste any time, grab your tickets today and come and watch me, Alfie and Robbie live.
And me.
Mainly me, Alfie and Robbie, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
HappyHourLive.co.uk. See you in May.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Nice to see you.
Yes, it is.
The way I first discovered you is Balls of Steel.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Great show. Great show. In fact, I was thinking about that and I wondered whether you'd ask me about that just because I watched your Psychics video the other day and I was like, damn it, that is something we would have done on Balls of Steel. Tom Cruise has his favourite fucking cake in the world. It's this amazing cake. But because he's always making Mission Impossible films, he can never eat it because he's got to be in physical, like, perfection.
Yeah.
And so he sends it to people he's worked with and friends as a gift every Christmas so he can live vicariously knowing people are eating this cake. And I made it onto that fucking list.
When me and Fee first got together, we played that game where it was like, oh, if you could sleep with anyone, like, and you have to have a pass.
Oh, your list.
Yeah. And I went Margot Robbie. She went for Alex.
I remember once having to interview Bruce Willis. And before me in the queue were Little Ant and Deck, and they were all like, Bruce Willis, and they were being psyched up by their producers, like, oh, have fun, do your shtick. Fuck knows what they did, but they went in, and about 2 minutes later, or 5 minutes, not 10 minutes, 2 minutes later, they came out and they were crying.
What?
They were in tears. People sometimes are like, do you watch yourself? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely I do. It's not a vanity thing. It's like, I'm doing it to see what I did well and what I did bad. So, you know, when I've got a lot of friends round and they're all having a good time, I'll turn the music off, I'll tell them to shut up and I'll put on a show. And I'll be like, "What? Watch this, because I think this is actually really good.
Put on Balls of Steel episodes 2005.
The last time I went to yours, we watched your videos for about an hour straight.
Did we?
Yes, sat in your living room. You just kept going, roast my viewers part two. What a classic. Let's put that on.
There's no shame in that. I've done the same.
Jack Makes Happy Hour.
Hello, guys, and welcome back to Jack Mates Happy Hour. We're fully in the swing of season four now, aren't we?
We're doing well.
But I think this is probably our first guest who's not a YouTuber on this season. Am I right?
You are right.
It's funny man, film critique, podcast host, presenter.
Yep.
It's Alex Zane.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Alan Zone.
Alan Zone, yeah.
We'll get to that later on. Thanks for coming in, mate.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Now, you're a podcaster.
I am.
And you're on the other side of, like, the interview seat today.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie, I feel a little unnerved. This is unusual for me. I'm not used to being interviewed. And the reason I'm sitting here with an A4 pad, which is, I know, unusual and has raised a few eyebrows already, is because I've done the same amount of prep that I would do for interviewing someone else, but about myself. And also, I've watched your face so much in the last 7 days in preparation for this.
See, well, I'm nervous because of that prep, because as you'll soon realise, I don't really do much of that.
That's why you don't need to be nervous. If he's watched it, he knows.
Well, I've actually had a few comments recently on the channel going, do you not know anything about the guest? But I don't know if this is like a trick of the trade, probably not because you're a professional. When people like cuss me up for not doing the research. I'm like, I'm doing the research on the show. I'm finding out about you then. So
if I over-prepare, I won't seem surprised when I learn something new, which is everything they tell me.
Well, this is going to be new. What's your go-to meal deal?
My go-to meal deal? I've never had a meal deal in my entire life.
What?
Well,
you're from Leeds.
I feel there's a trap. I think anything that's put on a platter like that, like there is something of benefit if you have an egg sandwich with this or whatever. Are we talking about a Boots meal deal or anything?
Yeah, anywhere, yeah. Right.
Tesco. Right.
It's because, obviously, they see you come and they go, oh, we got a lot of egg sandwiches. Stick it in the meal deal. And then suddenly, oh, look, an egg sandwich for £2.50 and a drink and packet of crisps. I'll have the egg sandwich. And then you're eating old egg sandwiches.
I don't think you know about meal deals.
Why?
Because, does he know about the Innocent Smoothie hack?
Yeah.
Do you know an Innocent Smoothie?
I'm aware of them.
It's about £2 on its own.
Yeah.
Maybe £2.50 some places. Mm. You can get that in a meal deal. That essentially means you can get a sandwich and a snack for 50p.
And if you don't eat the sandwich but just have the Innocent Smoothie, that's the advantage. My worry is purely health-based. It's like egg goes off quickly.
I have always said you shouldn't really be getting egg in a sandwich. I can't eat cold egg. I'm not about that.
Right, well, I mean, I don't eat egg anymore because I'm a vegan.
Oh, you're a vegan now, see?
How fast is it for a vegan to be on the show and go, by the way, I'm a vegan?
And that also shows how little research I've done, because I'm sure I could have found that out.
Anything I Googled, I didn't see vegan anywhere.
No, because I tend not to, as I've just disproved, I tend not to mention it, you know, it's just something personal to me. I don't like to talk about it, I don't like to make it a feature, but you brought up cold egg, and I used to love cold egg. Egg mayonnaise, Paul, you make that at home? Marvellous.
This is a very standard question, but what do vegans eat?
Just anything we can forage, really. You know, I spent half an hour in the park across the road just now looking for dinner. So
we did.
Yeah. Because I clocked that hanging out of Alex's bag as soon as he walked into the studio. Now, the listeners won't know right away what we're describing. Stevie, do you want to reveal it? It's a bit of a cardinal sin here on Happy Hour.
He's gone for a sparkling water.
Right.
Oh, that's it.
What's that about? You've changed. What happened to that boy from Leeds?
Yeah, it's like you in an interview. It's still all new to me. I'm still just arrived in London. Sparkling water. Oh, what is this magic?
Right, okay, we'll get on to it. We'll forget your meal deal because you fucking don't know what one is for some reason. Alex, you is a presenter your main trade, would you say?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, yes, it's a weird word, presenter, because I am by definition a presenter. But for me, a presenter is someone who turns up and reads other people's words. So I've only ever written anything I've ever presented on TV. So, yeah, I am a presenter, but more so now than ever. I'd like to call myself a movie broadcaster because it sounds better.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I am a presenter. Yeah.
You're quite well respected. You work for Sky Movies and all stuff like that.
Yeah, Sky Cinema. Now, as of about 2 years, but never mind, it's all right.
All downhill from here.
The way I first discovered you, which I think is most people like our age discovered you, is Balls of Steel.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, great show. In fact, I was thinking about that, and I wondered whether you'd ask me about that just because I watched your Psychics video the other day, and I was like, damn it, that is something we would have done on Balls of Steel.
Yeah. So if we could go back in time, maybe I'd have a little segment on there.
I imagine you would.
You did game shows, didn't you?
Yeah, we did, like Alex Zane's Brain Game, Alex Zane's Observation
Cleverness Game.
Yeah, I mean, it was of benefit that Zane rhymes with game, so themselves.
That's how you do YouTube. You pick a title first and you work backwards. That's literally how you do YouTube. Yeah. So you were doing it right back in the day. Just remembered, Stevie, I forgot to do our fucking intro that I said we were going to do.
Yeah, he said that he was going to do your classic intro.
Nice to see you.
Shows.
Yes, it is.
That would be lovely. Oh, what a missed opportunity.
I know, because did you voice note your brother?
Yeah, back in the day when Balls of Steel was around, I remember the first ever time we saw that. And as soon as you said, nice to see you, obviously, you know why you made the joke. We expected you to go down that way. And as soon as you said, yes, it is, we were just pissing ourselves.
Your brother's really giddy that you've...
Yeah, so I messaged him earlier and he's going, you have to do it to him. And I was like, Jack will. And then he hasn't.
I haven't done it. But we can clip the bit that we just did there, put it at the start. So, Katie, it's all on you now. If we don't start with that, it's your fault. Alex, was that the first bit of, like, proper TV that you did?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, MTV might like to call themselves proper TV. But... like you say, it's the first bit of TV that I did that most people saw. So I'd started on MTV in about 2002, and Balls of Steel came along a couple of years later, maybe 2 or 3 years later, and they asked me to do this game show segment on that. And then a lot of people went, that's brilliant. Mm. It's one of those shows that I love, and I think it finished too soon. We did 3 series in total, and I once bumped into the commissioner who'd axed it in the end, and he quite openly went, yeah, I think I maybe went too early on that one. I'm like, yeah, you did. Like,
yeah.
People still talk about that show.
It's like a cult classic, really, isn't it?
Do you think they'd be able to do it now? Like, do you think society would allow certain aspects of that show to be aired?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's a good question, because we actually tried to take the show to America. So I flew to New York to make a pilot for American TV. Mm. And it's, first of all, America is weird when it comes to making TV, because...
Mm. You had to call the show Balls of Aluminum, didn't you? Don't know if that works, is it? You can say steel in America. Stevie's just got it 2 minutes later. Right, sorry to interrupt you, mate. Go on. So you took it to...
We took it to America, and they were like... the weirdest thing was, so I was doing my game shows exactly as they were done in the UK, and people were coming in, and we were trying to do the pranks on them, and people were answering in exactly the same way as on the UK game show. Mm. And so I was like, with my producer, I'm like, what the hell's going on? And he's like, I've just spoken to them, they've hired actors to replicate the pranks, so to answer like the genuine people did in the UK, because they think it'll work better like
oh
that.
My god,
so they get the same show. I'm like, stop this immediately.
That kills the whole idea,
the whole point of it.
So for anyone listening who doesn't know the idea, I guess you can explain it better than I can, but
well, yeah, we took game show formats and then just fucked with people. Is as simple as it is. So you do like Mastermind, and you get these geniuses on who know a subject inside out, and you'd ask them a question and they'd say the right answer, and then you go, I'm sorry, that's wrong.
Yeah.
Like, we had the guy, the famous guy was the Anne Frank's Diary guy.
I don't think, is that guy?
That's what we were watching earlier.
So. I know so.
Gosh, it! Yeah. Ray, he was the only guy in all of the ones we ever did who refused us to use the footage. He was like, absolutely not. And in the end, they paid him some money. He was like, absolutely.
So, I was going to say, what's the moment like when you tell them? Because I remember the couples game where the woman stormed out and wasn't happy about the lie detector results.
Yeah, yeah. In the end, it's just relief. And it's in that moment when you, because you do, you think you're going insane. And with that one in particular, she was like, my boyfriend, this is unbelievable. My boyfriend hasn't been cheating on me. This machine is lying. Mm. And it's like, oh, of course it fucking is. but she didn't know. And then the minute you go, ha-ha, Balls of Steel. And they're like, oh, fuck, thank fuck, that's amazing.
Yeah.
The problem was, by the reason I did season 3 in America was doing, we started doing it in the UK, and people would come in and see me and go, oh, it's Balls of Steel, brilliant. And you're like, now you can't be on it. And they'd be like, no, I'll play along. I'm like, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Well, I assume they just thought they were going on like an actual game show.
Yeah. I mean, what you never saw on the show was, because to reel people in, as with any prank, as you did on the Sidekicks thing, you have to start at least in a realm of reality. So, like, people have to believe they're on a game show. So what never aired was I'd spend half an hour playing a fucking dull game show with them, where we were doing everything right, and they'd do 2 rounds, and they'd be playing along and thinking, this is all normal. And only then, after about half an hour of straight game show hosting, which I could never do in the real world because it's the most tedious thing ever, how fucking Bradley Walsh does it, I've no idea.
I think he does like 3 eps a day, doesn't he?
I mean, the guy must be going home and like stabbing a pig carcass in his garage. He must be insane.
You love the chase, don't you?
Yeah, I love the chase, but that doesn't mean that I could do what he does. No.
But so we do that, and then only then could you start messing with them.
Wow, I don't know why I didn't even think of that, because like you just quite rightly said, with the psychic thing, I had to have like a normal chat with them for about 20 minutes and then start fucking at the end, and that fucked my phone bill up. But what do you think, because you said about would it still work now, like the concept of the show, is there's some... I don't know. It was 2005, was it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So I would have been 12 and I was watching that show. And I feel like all my mates grew up watching that show.
Yeah.
We were far too young. You had the big gay following.
Yeah.
The militant black guy.
Yeah.
Like the devil guy.
Bunny Boiler. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nedge's Urban Sports.
Yeah.
Everyone loved Nedge.
He's. I think he's doing Facebook content now.
Is he really? Yeah. I think he was one of the people, because the format went all over the world, I think. But it went to Australia, and I think Nedge went out there to do his urban sports in Australia. It went to Sweden, and and they started filming series one and basically nearly caused a diplomatic incident with the Swedish Prime Minister, and it was axed before it aired.
Yeah, so maybe it wouldn't work today.
But the one thing that makes me think it might not, because in America we made the pilot, and then because America is such a litigious country, like they will just sue the ass out of you if they can claim, like, I was psychologically damaged by that prank. So they couldn't, no channel would insure it. No channel would insure the show. So it died a death before it aired.
There was one where, did you say Nedge? Didn't he, you just told me, I've not seen this one, but you said he ran in the building, was like, everyone get on the floor, and then just counts how many people were on the floor.
Yeah, I feel like that wouldn't go well in America at all.
Yeah.
But in England, you could probably still do it. There would be the...
Bring it back, Alex. Place. Get in touch with the powers that be and bring it back.
All right, done.
Did you, very cliche question, but did you always want to be a presenter, or did you have different dreams? Because your Wikipedia did say that you studied medicine. Research.
That's his research. Wikipedia.
And your Wikipedia, by the way, is the worst. It says you on your Wikipedia, it says you did RudeTube for about 4 series. Mm. So we went on like a different website. It's 11 or something, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We did it for a decade. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Wikipedia is weird. Like, some people's are updated, and mine sounds like I died in 2011. It's like I've not worked since 2011. Mm. But you try and call it Wikipedia, which I have done, and go, hello, Wikipedia, just because you are a resource, and you know I do want to carry on working, maybe you could update this so it doesn't look like I just have disappeared. And they're like, it's volunteers work, so you have to email us.
You can't, because I
did that. If you edit your own Wikipedia page too much, because I was like, I'm gonna just add sort of like the rest of my career to this,
and that's fair enough,
and they deleted it and then locked it, so I can't edit my own page now.
Our Wikipedia's changed. No, we don't have a Wikipedia. We don't have a Wikipedia, but we use a little flag whenever we tweet about Happy Hour. It's like a little yellow flag, and it's got like a Union Jack in the corner. It's the Isle of Newey's flag. We just took that. So when you go to that country's Wikipedia, it just says like this. It describes the flag, and then it says it's the country's national flag and the icon for Jack Mate's Happy Hour.
Well, it says stolen by.
Oh yeah,
and then it says. The Isle of Nui are yet to comment on this.
what are they going to say?
Citation needed.
I want to know what their president's favourite meal deal is. Have a proper crossover.
He loves an egg sandwich. the thing I remember, was, I can't remember which newspaper it was, there was a sports journalist writing for one of the tabloids, one of the Red Tops, and England were playing, you might know this story, England were playing a very small football team, and someone had basically gone on and re-edited this country's football team page and just made up a lot of shit.
Right.
And it was reprinted in the Mirror the following day as fact, because the guy just gone, don't know anything about them. Wikipedia. Oh, he once went into space. Brilliant. That's
great. That is definitely San Marino. I think it's San Marino.
I'd say San Marino.
Did you ever see the clip of the... because I take it you're not a football fan.
How could you tell?
there was a footballing nation. I think it was like Algeria or something. Did you ever see that when their national anthem played out and they were playing...
Oh, when it did a different song?
They accidentally played Numb,
Linkin Park.
Went, down, 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 down.
You could see all the players laughing straight away though.
Yeah, but... just crack up. Right, let's strip it back. So you're a young lad from Leeds.
Yeah.
You've got dreams and aspirations.
I do.
What are they? What were they?
Yeah, I was going to be a doctor, wasn't I? Yeah,
right.
I did my research. Remember that this is a two-way stream today. Two-way stream. I did my research as well, and you were a bit of a nerd at school. I read.
Okay.
That's what it said.
Yeah.
It was just because
I didn't have a choice. I was ginger. So
right.
It was like, that's your place in the school hierarchy.
Yeah. You
know, are we flipping this on me now?
No, I was just interested. I was just asking a question, just finding some common ground between us.
Well, I wanted to be a presenter.
Right.
And I know you are one of the country's most successful presenters. So thanks. Was that always your aim?
No, because I was a proper geek at school, but mine was self-inflicted because I was the only kid at my school. I went to a massive comprehensive school in Leeds, 2,000 kids, and I was the only kid, through choice, that carried a briefcase. So,
oh, God. So sparkling water. You haven't changed, actually. I thought you had, but you haven't.
Yeah, I used to put water in a soda stream, put it in my briefcase with, like, sparkling water. One day I won't have to make it myself. So I was a real geek at school and did science. And then I didn't know what I wanted to do. And everyone was like, oh, you did science. Do you want to be a scientist? I'm like, no fucking way. Hmm. And they were like, well, medicine. And so I started on the course to be a doctor and got all the way to medical school before I realised it was a lot of work.
Yeah, is that because it was just like, that's what you thought you should do, like a path in that?
Because I didn't really have an idea. But by the time I got there, I'd started doing stand-up comedy. Hmm. And I really loved it, and it was great fun, and it didn't involve, like, understanding what histology was.
Which is a plus.
Yeah, which I still don't. At the end of my first year at medical school, I sat down with the dean of students, got my exam results in front of her, and we agreed that I should get the fuck off her property as soon as possible.
What was your first gig like? How does a medical student just one day go, fuck it, I'm going to be a comedian?
Because like when I was about 17, 18, it was when stand-up comedy had started to become pretty rock and roll. Like Eddie Izzard had just was the biggest comic on the planet.
Yeah.
And it was someone who suddenly was doing stuff that I was like, this is amazing. Like this is the imagination, the surrealism. And I saw that and I was like, I want to give that a go.
Mm.
And so I did. And I was shit.
Was you?
The first gig was the worst.
Yeah, but everyone's first gig's the worst, isn't it?
I know, but that's the arrogance that you have to do stand-up.
A lot of comedians tend to say that they were the class clown, but it doesn't sound like you were if you carried a briefcase.
No.
And did medicine.
No, but what that does is trains you to deal with hecklers.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, a lot of comedians were often on the other end of it, so you have to get thick skin and then learn how to flip it on them.
I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but it's like you use humour as a defence mechanism when people have sticks and rocks.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's true. What were we saying before that? I've lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, your first gig.
Mm, yeah, it was, do you know Leeds at all?
I've only been to the festival.
Okay, that's a bit outside Leeds, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. So no then.
No. Leeds City Centre is just like Leeds Festival. More concrete, less tense. Mm. But, I did a gig in a pub called the Dry Dock in Leeds, if anyone knows Leeds, which is a long barge. Which is the worst room to do comedy in because the people at one end have no idea what's going on the stage. So you're shouting over this crowd. And, yeah, it didn't go well. But then I did another gig in Manchester and ended up in the Edinburgh Festival as part of this stand-up comedy competition.
Mad.
And it sort of kind of snowballed from there because I was in Edinburgh when MTV, and it's one of those things. Well, and I used to sort of rally against this because when people go, oh, you know, you're lucky to get where you are. You're lucky. And you're like, fuck that. No, it's hard work and it's talent. It is luck. They are right. And for anyone who I've ever gone, shut your fucking mouth. It's not luck. I was wrong. Time has proved you right because MTV were in the room and they were like looking for presenters and they were like, you're young and vaguely funny. Mm. So why don't you come down and screen test? And that's how I got the gig on MTV and everything kind of snowballed from there.
Wow, that's fair enough. Did you? I read that you were hand-picked by Ricky Gervais to...
Yeah.
Is that so?
Friend of the show, Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, he's been on.
Yeah, he's great. He was working at XFM and we shared an agent. And again, you know, it is one of those things, you know, like luck has something to do with it. Mm. And apparently the age-old adage, it's not what you know, it's who you know. There is some weight in that as well because we shared an agent and he was working at XFM and I just got a call from him going, do you want to maybe do a pilot for XFM? It wasn't just an open door. Like, come on, you've got the breakfast show. Off you go.
Yeah.
He was like, they're looking for DJs.
He called you directly, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Was that a strange call to receive?
I'd met him a few times, so it wasn't that strange. But yeah, it was still really nice. And this is pre The Office. This is going back that far, yeah.
So he was just a mere scumbag back then.
His podcast days.
Yeah, Ricky, I don't have time for this.
2002 rolls around. Actually.
Now I'm like, Ricky's not taking my calls.
So you've done radio. You've done all kinds of presenting. You've done TV. What's your favourite? Because I've actually seen you work live before. I've been to a few movie premieres. You seem to do it. You cover a lot of them.
That's good. Yeah. Mm. Have you seen me on stage at those?
Yeah.
Things?
Yeah.
They're hard work.
Yeah.
They're hard
I
work.
Bet.
Yeah. I do count myself as lucky, which again is like something I wouldn't have said 10 years ago.
Mm.
But it's great to work at Sky Cinema because I love film. I've always loved film. Like film is like, you know, from the reason I don't like football is because like all of the other kids were out playing football in the sunshine. I drew the curtains and watched sci-fi movies. And that's why I was a very pale child, very big eyes. So I watched, I like honestly like a Morlock, like locked away watching movies. But from like age five onwards, I've just always loved films, now doing that is great.
But it seems stressful because like them kind of nights, like those kind of red carpet kind of like premieres and whatnot, they're very enjoyable when you're at them, but you're working them. Like, so do you actually get time to actually be like, I'm enjoying the night, or is it more of just like I'm in work mode?
Well, I guess it's like anything, it's work mode, because like anything you do, you basically end up sort of judging it against, you know, whether you think you've done a good job. So it's not like doing Tom Cruise ones are good. So the reason I love those is because when I was still a student at Goldsmiths in London, after I dropped out of medical school, I realised that I needed some money. So I went back to uni to do media, and I was walking through Leicester Square, and it was the premiere for, I think it was maybe Vanilla Sky.
Right.
I'd never seen a premiere before, and I sort of pushed my way to the front, and like Tom Cruise was doing the line, and somehow like our paths crossed just as I got to the front. He was shaking hands, and he shook my hand, and I was like, fucking mind blown. I went straight back to the halls of residence. I was like, oh, you're never going to guess who I just touched. I just touched Tom Cruise's hand. And now, like, flash forward, like, you know, 15 years, and he asks for me personally to host his premieres when he comes to London. And you know, I mean, I'm just going to come out and say it. So I'm on his cake list, you know, the Tom Cruise cake list, where, so Tom Cruise, I'll tell you the cake list because it's quite an interesting thing. Tom Cruise has his favourite fucking cake in the world. It's this amazing cake. It's like coconut and vanilla. It's gorgeous. But because he's always making Mission Impossible films, he can never eat it because he's got to be in physical like perfection.
Yeah.
And so he sends it to people he's worked with and friends as a gift every Christmas so he can live vicariously knowing people are eating this cake. And I made it onto that fucking list. So I get a cake every year from Tom Cruise.
Wow. That is so weird.
Wow. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
So that to answer your question, so it's not just me bragging about getting a fucking cake.
Oh, mate, you can brag all day long, mate. We're here for these stories. They'll go bloody great in the trailer.
But yeah, it's one of those things to go from being the guy who was like overwhelmed by shaking Tom Cruise's hand, like as a 20-year-old, to sort of like as a 35, 40-year-old, sort of like getting a cake from him. It's like, then you pinch yourself and go, that's just insane.
Yeah, yeah, fucking hell. I bet you never get used to it, do you?
No, or do
you strut about now, like, yeah, me and Tom Cruise are bezies?
That's what you do with your bass. So.
Oh, God. The awkward thing is, yeah, like, you might have experienced this, right? I can count on one hand how many times I've done, like, an interview with Gervais or done a video with him, right? And he is my comedy hero, and I have a lot of his mannerisms and yada, yada, yada. But because everyone knew this online, that he was my big guy that I aspire to be. Like, when we did do stuff together, and from that moment on, I get asked about him all the time. Now, obviously, that's what people are going to want to be interested in. Like, we're interested in all your celebrity stories and whatnot. But when they take, like, they'll do an interview with me, and they'll take that one line, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, I've done a few things with Gervais, and they twist it like Jack mate on being best mates with Ricky Gervais. I imagine that he sat at home going, what the fuck is going on? Like, and he does come up a lot on this show, but in kind of like natural ways like that. But do you feel that?
Yeah, I was doing a festival every year that Soho House does called House Festival, and they asked me to introduce a band. I can't for the life of me remember who it was. For argument's sake, let's say it was the Kaiser Chiefs. Mm. But it was a band, and they introduced me on stage to introduce the Kaiser Chiefs, and really all it needs, because it's the Kaiser Chiefs moment, and all it needs is, here to introduce the Kaiser Chiefs, Alex Zane. And they went, here to introduce the Kaiser Chiefs, this is echoing around the festival, here to introduce the Kaiser Chiefs, friend of Tom Cruise, it's Alex Zane. I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, not only is that not relevant at all, but also, that is not what I'm defined by.
Yeah, they've boiled you down to somebody that you know.
We've got a lot here, but we're short on time, so let's just cross, works for TV, boring. Friends with Tom Cruise, say that.
You know, after this, someone will finally change your Wikipedia, and that's all it's going to say.
Yeah, friend of Tom Cruise, yeah. These events, mate, you smash them every time I've seen you, fucking model pro, but I've never seen you. I've heard that you've, and this could be bad research, but I've heard that you've done the Oscars.
Oh, yeah.
Golden Globes.
Yeah.
That's next level gravy, that, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's great. Mm. Again, it's that weird thing, because on paper it sounds like fucking hell, yeah. The Oscars. But in reality, although I'm going to say this, so we were in LA for the Oscars this year, just gone. So we were on top of the Hotel Roosevelt, which is on Hollywood Boulevard, literally opposite the auditorium. I've never been inside the Oscars. I've never sat there and watched the Oscars. And I've learned not to go. So I'm hosting the Oscars this year because people go, what? Yeah. I mean, I'm hosting the TV coverage of the Oscars on Sky Cinema or Sky Movies. Because it sounds like I think I'm hosting the fucking Oscars. Mm. But this year we did it from LA. A lot of years, it's quite hard work because you don't start, time difference wise, you start at midnight and you're in a studio at Sky Studios in Southwest London. Mm. And it's like, the glamour is sort of there on the screen, but not really in the room when you're drinking coffee at 4 a.m. I mean, the thing that really woke us up was when they got the fucking wrong envelope that year, because that was the last award and everyone was dead in the studio. And suddenly you've got people in the gallery and people are freaking out because you can hear them in the gallery in Los Angeles, and like, you know, they're like, shit, and people in Sky are going, I think there's a bomb threat or something's going off, and then it was that fucking envelope gate. So that wakes you up.
What was that again? I definitely
recall it, but I can't remember. La La Land.
That was the big La La Land moonlight controversy where...
Did they get the wrong...
The story's quite funny. So it is the epitome of... You had one fucking job. There's a guy there from an accountancy firm who has a briefcase with all the envelopes in, and he hands them to the presenters as they walk on stage. And he handed Warren Beatty the wrong envelope. And it was the envelope for a previous award, a duplicate envelope. And it said Emma Stone on it from La La Land. She'd already picked up her award. Mm. And so he's out there and he sort of reads it, and it's not the right award. And the reason the guy gave him the wrong envelope was because he was doing selfies of Emma Stone backstage. So literally, he was half-arsing it completely. He was there trying to get himself in the picture with Emma Stone behind him and going... Ksh, ksh, ksh.
Oh, my God.
And he was posting them at exactly the moment that the wrong award was read out. I don't think that company does it anymore.
Yeah, I bet. When you're hosting a night like that, or a red carpet event in Leicester Square, as a presenter, what... You have so much going on, don't you? You have people talking to you in your ear, and like, what? So, talk us through what would be expected if there's any like young kids out there that might want to do presenting. I know I've dabbled in it a little bit, and I didn't realize just how hard it is. Mm. So, what kind of things do you have to like think of when you're presenting?
It's a weird one because there are so many different ways to present. I mean, the things that we're talking about, the premieres and stuff, that's live presenting, that's sort of big events and like that. I mean, it's all, weirdly enough, it's all really easy to pick up. It's, it takes more effort to start a boulder moving than it does to keep it moving. So once you're actually in there, people can teach you the skills that you need to be a presenter. It's getting in the first place. And I've always said, you know, I mean, I've ended up doing exactly what I want, which is talk about films. And I do think that the best way to enter presenting now, because I think that those halcyon days of like, hey, if you want to be a presenter, just send us you talking to camera and come on and host Dancing on Ice or whatever. I think really now the way to break through is to talk about something that you know a shitload about and be an expert in your field. Mm. Because I think 90% of the presenters that you see on TV now are presenters talking about something they know inside out, whether it's nutrition, whether it's property, whatever it is, history, like music. And I think know that subject matter, and that's your way in.
But you also need to have some like actual skill, don't you? Like, rather than just being knowledgeable on the thing, because like you're a very good talker, like that, and like you're a handsome chap and stuff like that. So how much? Well, actually, as we're onto this, I think I've told you this before. I don't know if you remember, right? When I first got with my partner Fiona, who's outside now.
She's just written on the screen, don't you dare.
You know I have to now. And then you're going to have to meet Alex when he comes out of this room, Fiona. What are you going to say? She said, OMG. OMG. So we'd been together about 3-4 months. I'm speaking directly to Fiona now. This is how professional I am. Fee, I didn't tell you I was going to tell this story in the car, because I know you'd have told me not to, but I'm going to. When me and Fee first got together, we played that game where it was like, oh, if you could sleep with anyone, like, and you have to have a pass.
Oh, your list.
Yeah. And I was like, right, because lads have to play it quite carefully, because in case they miss his proper kickoff. So I was like, right, I'll go for someone who is like...
Unobtainable.
You know where this is going already. I went Margot Robbie. I was like, oh, I don't mind a bit of Robbie. She went for Alex Alex Zane. And I thought, okay, right, that's all right. Like, still a celebrity, still probably unobtainable. Then you do a podcast in the same fucking place as us. She put, fuck's sake, wedding is off. Oh, God, fucking hell. I don't even know how I got onto that. What was the question? Yeah, bloody looks, you dashing bastard. How important is it to be able to, like, speak well and stuff like that?
To look good.
Yeah. Do you have to, can you learn to speak well?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you can. I mean, not just to throw it back at you, but like, when you first started doing your videos, do you think you were as good then as you are now?
No, shit.
Exactly. And yeah. I've still got the screen test that I did at MTV. And this is the ridiculous arrogance sometimes that you need to do this in the first place. And you do. I mean, that's one thing. You have to have so much fucking self-belief to actually, like, have the confidence to do this. But I watched it thinking, but I was good back then. It's fucking awful.
Yeah.
It's unwatchable. And I just can't believe that I got the job and then managed to stay in it long enough to actually learn the skills of the trade. But no, I think if someone, like, has them already and can put a tape and is good, someone should hire them.
But then when you look back on old stuff, you should look back at it with a bit of cringe, because then that shows progression. Like, if you look back on something, if I look back at my first video and thought, that's a cracker, that, like, then it's just downhill from there.
Well, that's the thing. Like, people sometimes are like, do you watch yourself? Or do you watch your old shows? Mm. Do you watch your shows back after they've just gone out? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely I do. And it's not a vanity thing. It's like, I'm doing it to see what I did well and what I did bad. So, you know, when I've got a lot of friends around and they're all having a good time, I'll turn the music off. I'll tell them to shut up and I'll put on a show. And I'll be like, watch this, because I think this is actually really good.
Put on Balls of Steel episodes 2005.
The last time I went to yours, we watched your videos for about an hour straight.
Did we?
Yes, sat in your living room. You just kept going, roast my viewers, part two. What a classic. Let's put that on.
There's no shame in that. I've done the same. I've done the same, except that mine are from about a decade ago. So I'm going, oh, remember when I did this? No, we don't. I never saw this. Well, this will be amazing then. This will be a first time for you. Sit back, enjoy this. People are like, I just came around for a drink. And it's like, yeah, well, you can still have your fucking drink. Just watch this.
Watch and drink. I can't believe I did that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I do enjoy your content occasionally.
Thank you. On the way back from London today, we're going to just play this podcast back, and me and you are going to be cracking up. Fiona's in the back. You can sit in the front.
Okay, right? Good.
And we'll just laugh at ourselves. Yeah,
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Want to be more active this summer? Sierra helps you save on everything from swimsuits to stand-up paddle boards, tennis rackets to fishing tackle. And if that doesn't float your boat, we also have pool floats. Sierra, let's get moving. To your local store, like now. Go!
Hi, I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars. Because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
When you watch yourself back, Alex, how do you know? This might sound like a simple question, but how do you know when you've done a good job at presenting?
That's a great question. I don't know how to answer that. I think you can just tell. I think it's like, you know, like with an actor hitting their marks or whatever, I think you just sort of like know whether you've delivered a joke. It completely varies from job to job. Like the premieres we were talking about, it's literally just like not fucking up in front of a packed Leicester Square and saying the wrong thing to a star.
Have you had many moments where you've looked back and gone, why did I say that?
Yeah, absolutely. I was interviewing, although I'd still argue this isn't my fault. I was interviewing Nicole Kidman for, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Australia, the one with Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. So I was interviewing her for that. And I think it got lost in translation in some way. I think words mean different things to certain people, or maybe in like different countries. In that movie, she's in period dress and she is wearing what I describe as a corset. So I said to her on stage, I was like, so obviously you said yes to this movie. You'd worked with Baz Luhrmann, the director, before when it was 100 degrees and you were wearing a corset. I mean, did you ever think, oh, I wish I'd thought about it a bit longer? And she went, what? I went, when you were wearing a corset and it was 100 degrees, did you ever sort of question your decision? She was like, I didn't wear a corset in this. I was like, what? No, the thing that you were wearing. She was like, are you saying I wore a corset in this movie? I'm like, I think you did. And she went, Baz, and grabs the microphone off me and starts shouting across Leicester Square to the director, Baz Luhrmann, Baz, Baz, come here and tell this man I didn't wear a corset in the movie. And I'm, at that point, I just had my head in my hands going, because everyone can hear it. It's echoing around the square. Baz, Baz, Baz. Yeah. Come here. Tell this man. I'm like, what is happening? But I think
so. This is on stage.
This is on stage. This is live in Leicester.
So was she wearing a corset?
I guess maybe it's a bodice. Now that's all I can think. But it's a fucking corset.
Yeah, fucking hell. Do you get nervous when you interview people like that?
The most nervous I've ever been, just because we were talking about him already, is I was doing an interview with Tom Cruise on top of the IMAX cinema in London. You know, the big sphere, the big thing in the middle of the junction. It's a huge building. Mm-hmm. And we were on top of that. And they were going to do this brilliant shot with London in the background, really high up, Mission Impossible film. So danger, danger, danger. Mm. Obviously not danger, but actually real danger. Mm. Because the gantry that we were standing on hadn't been used for 10 years. And this health and safety guy was like, I'll let you go out there, both you and Tom, but you have to wear this harness thing and be linked onto it in case it collapses because no one uses it. Mm. I'm like, well, great. That's made me feel safe. And so we go out there and I'm standing waiting for Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise bounds out and the guy goes, just going to put this harness on you. And he goes, no, no, no. And knocks the harness away and walks straight out onto the gantry because he's Tom Cruise and he's not going to wear a harness. Mm. At that point, I hear the health and safety guy go, I'm out, and walk back inside. Tom Cruise gets on this gantry and he's like, this is cool. This is really cool, isn't it? And starts shaking this gantry that is suspended over the road from side to side. And I can see plumes of dust like coming from the bolts, like rust snapping. And I'm like, I was in, you know, when adrenaline hits you and you're in hysterics. Mm. And I was just in hysterics, which he then took as, this is brilliantly funny. I'm going to carry on doing it. And I'm trying, stop! Stop! And he's like, ha-ha-ha-ha! He's shaking this gantry. And all I can think is, if this collapses and we both fall to our deaths,
yeah,
no one's going to know I've died.
Oh, God.
That's quite interesting that you've said your most nervous moment was nothing to do with interviewing.
That's what I picked up on. Yeah, that's what always surprises me when I meet like an actual presenter or an interviewer, because literally going back to what I said a minute ago, when I first interviewed Ricky Gervais, I was shitting myself. And the first 8 minutes of that interview is the shittest stuff ever. Like, I warmed up and it got okay by the end, but that's why when I look at people like yourself and people who do these like press junkets for a living, it amazes me like how calm and composed you seem. Now, I know you're a bit older than me, you've been in the game longer and whatnot, but do you never get like a bit trembly before a big name?
Yes, it's the honest answer, yes. I mean, normally it's all sort of, it's all lovely, you know, it's rainbows and unicorns and everything's fine. But occasionally you are walking into a situation and there are certain people who are notoriously difficult to interview. Mm. So I, just last year, I had to do an interview with Joaquin Phoenix for The Joker.
Wow.
Who is, he's a scary person. I don't know why. He is a scary person. He's a terrifying person to interview.
He seems like a lot of hard work.
He's intense and, you know, he's very thoughtful and, you know, I don't begrudge him any of that because, it's, you know, that's who he is. But as an interviewer, that's pretty scary. And when I sat down to interview him, I think he'd got it into his head that maybe we were a news outlet like Sky News or something. And he was thought it was going to be because there was a lot going on about the Joker and how it was going to inspire gun crime and all sorts.
Oh, so he thought you were going to do like a hit piece or something.
Yeah. So he was really. So I was like, have you told him that we're not those people? And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But if it's a bit weird at the start, that's why. I'm like, fucking A. Great. So he sits down. And I'm like, just so you know, Joaquin, this is all about the movie. We're a movie channel. Sky Cinema or movies, whatever you fancy, we're keen. It's up to you. Just, you know, it's just about movies.
Got and
he's,
that.
He's like, all right, yeah, cool. I'm like, great. So it's going to be about 15 minutes long. And he went, we'll see.
Oh, my God.
And at that point, I went, oh, fuck me, this is going to be hard. But actually, he was fine in the end. It was just, wow. Of all the things, of all the people who could be, it's going to be 15 minutes, 15 lovely minutes, Joaquin. Yeah, we'll see. I'll let you know.
Oh, my God. Like, see, that's when I would have crumbled. That's I've only ever done one press junket, and I don't know why I got given the job or what. It was actually just for a mate, really. And it was for TED 2.
Okay.
And I mean, you've done 100 of these things, so you know exactly how they work. But I had 5 minutes with four of the actors, and the first one was Mark Wahlberg, and it was the one I didn't want first because I was like, I want to warm up. So I imagine Seth MacFarlane's going to be nice. I'll get him done, and then I'll get to Mark Wahlberg. And I walked in as like, God, when was this? About 4 years ago, this sweaty ginger lad. And they were like, you get 30 seconds to say hello and 30 seconds afterwards, but you get the 5 minutes in the middle. And I went, Mark, nice to meet you. Just quick chat. Standard stuff. And he was like, yeah, no worries. And then they were like, right, you go. And we're on camera. And I went, Mark, lovely to meet you. And I outstretched my hand and he just looked at me, didn't put his hand out and just went, but we already shook hands already. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, I'm not equipped to deal with this. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a YouTuber. He's been fucking sat here. And then somebody else asked me if I would ask, her name's just escaped me, Fee. Amanda Seyfried.
Seyfried.
Yeah. Have you heard about her tattoo that she's got?
No.
So she has a tattoo of the word minge on her foot. So one of my mates just basically said that you wouldn't be doing your job if you didn't say, can I see your minge? So and the thing was, I wouldn't do it now. I've learned mistakes. I've learned from, you know about this, don't you?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think whether you've been invited to do any other press junkets.
One and done. But yeah, no, so I sat down and I'd researched it. She'd been asked it before and she was fine. So I was like, it's probably going to be fine, but it will score me a lot of points with my mate. So I'm going to do it. But I forgot that all the camera guys in the room, they don't know what you're going to say. So I've just gone, Amanda, is it okay if I can see you binge? And I've just heard people go, what? Like, what's going on? And she's looked at me for what seemed like an eternity, and then she showed me the tattoo on her foot. Have you? Give us some horror stories. You don't have to name anyone, Alex. You don't have to name anyone. You're still in the game, but...
There are difficult people. I'm just trying to think if I've got one that works without knowing who the person is, but they all require me to name the person. But
right, okay.
Yeah, it's just sometimes you have strange experiences with people who you think are going to be great. I mean, like, often it's not them. Like with Amanda Seyfried, weirdly enough, we were doing an interview for Les Miserables, and she was like, because we do a massive setup at Sky with a camera that tracks round and it's a wide shot. And she wanted to wear a coat. She was like, it's cold in here. Can I wear my coat? And my producer went, oh, I'm sorry, we've got a wide shot. So it won't look great if you've got your coat on or over your knees or anything. And right. Her PR just shouts from the back of the room, if Amanda wants to wear a coat, she's going to wear a fucking coat.
Oh, God. Like,
but again, that's not her. And it's often the people who surround these people that you like, you make them look worse.
Yeah. Yeah, they get sort of, what is the word, mollycoddled or something?
Mollycoddled.
One of my first ever interviews I did was with Leona Lewis, and I was shitting myself for that. I was probably about 19, something like that. And I remember I got to the YouTube studio place where we were doing it, and they were like, can we see your questions? So I handed her manager the question, and she just took out a pen and just went, nope. Left me for about two, and I was about to do the interview. So I just went in and just asked all the questions anyway. So I've got nothing else, so I'm just going to do it. And she was absolutely fine. So, I can see.
It's often the way. It's weird sometimes. There is just one big A-list actor who when I've done him at premieres, and when you do him, he's the only one I've ever had this with where you have to send the questions in advance. He won't do an interview on stage. And these are little silly questions, you know. It's a premiere, so they're very, not silly questions, but they're very light. Like, what was it like working with so-and-so? What can fans expect from the movie? Very basic stuff.
Mm.
But he has to have them in a list beforehand, and he wants to know what they are, and you have to read them in that order because he works out all his answers beforehand. He cannot answer spontaneously.
Wow.
And so he comes out and he walks on stage, and I've, you know, he's a big star, so I'm like, right, I got this, just going to ask those questions. And he comes on, and before I ask the first question, I went, how are you? And he looked fucking livid. That wasn't on the list. Whoa. How are you wasn't on the list. And he was like, and I was like, oh, come on. Yeah. Yeah. How are you? I didn't need to write that
improv
on the
list. Improv it. Yeah. Wow. How about your best interview then ever? Who's somebody that's like great? Can I name you some names? Like, and you don't have to tell me if they're bastards,
okay,
but you can just tell me if they're amazing. And if you skip the fact that they're amazing, then I'll just take it that they're a bastard. The Rock, he seems like it'd be fun.
Yeah, The Rock's brilliant. Rock is absolutely brilliant. Yeah, he's great fun. And from the first time I ever met him, he was great as well.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever seen, what was it called here? Welcome to the Jungle. It was called The Rundown in the US.
Right.
Amazing action movie, and I did him for that. As an interviewer, he speaks in sound bites. He will speak for literally about 30 seconds, and when you've got like 4 minutes with someone, it's like, fuck, you know this game from the off. So yeah, he's lovely. The Rock's lovely.
Perfect. We had a guy called Tubes in here who, you know Tubesy? Tubes?
From Soccer AM.
From Soccer AM, yeah. I was a bit cautious because you said you weren't a football fan, so I didn't know if you'd know, but he's done a lot of press junkets back in the day. Was it Denzel Washington that he said was the nicest man? Have you?
Absolutely, yeah. So I interviewed Denzel in New York. We did this big career retrospective where we play a star, like moments, the best moments from their movie life on a big screen, and we sit and we go through it. It's great fun. Mm. And I was sort of quite nervous with Denzel because he's just a big star, and I'd met him once before, and he was in the middle of shooting, and it had sort of been fine, but we'd only had a very short interview. And so I went over to him just before the interview, before he sat in the seat, and I went, hey, Denzel, great to have you here. I'm not sure if you remember, but we met on the set of The Equalizer 2 just about 4 months ago. And he looked at me and went, no, I don't. And that was it.
Wow.
And that was all he said. And I walked away and I was like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Because we've got an hour with him, a fucking hour of that. But actually, he was fine. He was just warming up. He had his coffee. And when he sat down, genuinely a phenomenal human being. And like by the end, he didn't want to leave. He was like watching all his old movies going, fucking that one.
Tube said that he was one of the ones where his team came up and said, don't do any of that, don't do any of that. And then
basically Tubes would do like silly shit, like put potato in his mouth and like,
yeah.
So, and then, he said that after the interview, Denzel had him like in a headlock, like taking him out jokingly, and everyone was just looking, going, what on earth is going on here? How are they friends?
I love stories like that.
That's the thing. It's like, I feel so much for those people who are required by whatever channel they're doing it for or wherever they're doing it, where they've had to go in and do stupid stuff, because that's when you're putting your life on the line and you can just go tits up and you can be in hell and everyone's going, why the fuck did you do that?
Mm.
I remember once having to interview Bruce Willis, and before me in the queue were Little Ant and Deck from Saturday Night Takeaway. And this was quite a serious movie. I think it was Surrogates, this really awful sci-fi movie that he'd done. But anyway, they were ahead of me in the queue. And they were all like, yeah, we're going in, Bruce Willis. And they were being psyched up by their producers, like, oh, have fun, do your shtick. Mm. What? Fuck knows what they did, but they went in, and about 2 minutes later, not 5 minutes, not 10 minutes, 2 minutes later, they came out and they were crying.
What?
They were in tears. And I was like, cool, so I'm up next. And I walk in, and Bruce Willis is just sitting there, and I sit down, and he goes, are your questions about the fucking movie or not?
Oh, like, my God.
Yes, they are.
Starting off on the back foot. Fucking hell.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Talking about crying, that was pretty much me after the Mark Wahlberg one, really. But we had Freddie Flintoff was there to interview him as well.
Yeah.
And when I went in, as I said, the only one I've ever done, so I was big-eyed and fucking excited but nervous. And I was just like hanging on Wahlberg's everywhere. Yeah, okay, brilliant, yeah. And then I got the 5 minutes in, came out, and it was then Freddie Flintoff's turn to go in. And I thought Mark Wahlberg was a bit of a prick, right? You can no comment that, Alex. I'm not trying to get that out of you, but that's my opinion. And Freddie went in, and I was thinking, I wonder if he's just going to be like just so much better than me as he's done it, and he's probably not a starstruck. And he came out 2 minutes later, and I was just like, what the fuck? He went, yeah, the guy's a fucking knobhead. And just fair play. Alex, you host Clash of the Titles.
I do, yes.
A podcast here at Stakhanov, which is on our network as well. You've been doing it a year today.
I know. I honestly didn't know that. You told me when we came in. I was like, fantastic. That's great. A year old.
30th of July.
Fantastic.
If you didn't know the date. Do you want to run through the little synopsis? If anyone out there hasn't heard it.
It is where we take two movies that have something in common and pit them against each other each week to see which one is the better film. So, prime example is we did Street Fighter, the movie, versus Mortal Kombat, and we did Deep Blue Sea, massive killer aquatic animal sharks, mm-hmm. versus Anaconda, massive killer aquatic animal snake.
Right.
And so it's things like that. And we basically talk about the movie, take the piss out of the movie if it's shit, or like, and you know, you find out a lot about these movies and how they were made. And you know, it's talking about movies. So if you're a movie fan, it will really appeal. If you hate movies, it's probably not the podcast for you.
I reckon recommend you check it out thoroughly. I think we're going to try and play a little version of that now, shall we?
Yeah, I'm used to being judged in the most negative light on this show. And now we have, I class you as a bit of a movie expert, so
well, I should hope so.
Yeah,
profession,
but like, as in, if your opinion's going to matter more than when people tell me they don't like that, I get a popcorn and a meal deal.
Well, before we get onto that, actually, because I want to pick your brain, what did you think of Joker?
Loved it, loved it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I sat down with Todd Phillips, the director, and I was a bit careful about what I wanted to say. I found it like hilarious. Like, I thought it was really funny. Like, I thought there were moments in it and bleakly funny and darkly funny and like horribly funny, but funny. Just at moments you just can't believe what you're watching.
Yeah.
And I said that to him. I was like, I kind of see it as a comedy. And he was like, well, that's because you're a freak like me. I was like, okay, I'll take that. But yeah, I loved it. Did you like it?
I absolutely love it. It's like one of my favorite films ever. But I'm not a film critic. I don't know what makes a good film, really. I'm just one of these people that goes, yeah, I like that. Like, I enjoyed it. And I feel it's one of these films that people kind of feel cool to dislike.
Yeah. I think it's one of those where it depends where you stand on a few things, but there are arguments for why it's bad morally and what it might have incited. But again, I think what happened with Joker is that the press like got this bit in their mouth about the idea that it was going to incite gun violence. And from that, they created this narrative like that, you know, cinemas are going to be adding more security. You know, people are going to be committing crimes because, you know, cinemas, there's the potential that maybe, you know, they'll have a repeat of what happened in the Dark Knight Rises in the US, where someone opened fire in a cinema and they were going, and the film knows what it's doing and it's responsible. So if anything bad happens, and nothing happened because it wasn't going to do that. But again, it's about creating a narrative in the press and then doubling down on that narrative.
Most people are like sane enough to separate the art from, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like the people that, oh, if you play GTA, you're going to go out and run people over. It's like, no, only people that are wired to do that anyway are going to do that. Yeah. You don't need to watch a movie to tell you to do it.
And also, only when I feel that I've overpaid for a prostitute. I'm joking.
Before we play the game, what is your favourite film? I feel like I should know it, but I don't know it. What is your favourite film of all time?
My favourite film of all time is Jaws.
Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah, yeah. Do you know the YouTuber Jack Howard at all?
I do, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's been banging on about that a lot recently. He's a friend of mine, and I was going to suggest, you mentioned before we came on air that you don't watch many YouTubers. I'd definitely recommend him.
I know Jack. Jack's lovely, and he's probably been banging on about it because it had an anniversary recently.
Oh, so right.
Where are we now? 75, 45th, I think. It's 45th anniversary.
But I've never seen it.
What?
You've never seen Jaws?
I will be honest, right? Until I saw Jack Howard banging on about it, I thought it was a bit of like a gimmicky comedy type film, because you know the shark's meant to look the shark looks shit now, doesn't it, over so many years. Like,
I mean, arguably the power of the movie is the fact that it doesn't, because by the time you see it, Steven Spielberg has built up such a level of terror by not showing you the shark that when it eventually appears at the back of the ship and like you're like, there's the shark for the first time, you are terrified because the groundwork has been done. So, you know, it could look like anything and you'd still be scared. But yeah, I mean, I'd argue that the shark in Jaws is still more terrifying than any CGI sharks that you see floating around.
Really? Well, just because the way they build the tension and stuff?
Yeah, because of the film itself, because of the direction of the film, yeah, and the fact you don't see it for so long, it's just this hidden threat. I haven't been in the sea since I was 6 years old, which is when I first watched Jaws. Got a tattoo. My only tattoo is of a shark on my wrist.
Oh, wow.
To remind myself, if I ever got drunk on a beach, like to not... Because you know when you get carried away, you're drunk on a beach, people are like, well, it's going to see, it's skinny dipping, it's going to be cool. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'm drunk enough, got enough margarita in me, then that seems like a really fucking good idea. All I need to do is look down and go, nope.
And remember.
There's sharks out there.
Although I think it's quite unlikely.
Well, you say that. That's what a phobia is. I can get in a lake. I mean, I couldn't have bubbles in the bath for about 10 years because I needed to be able to see the bottom in case a trapdoor opened and a shark swam up and death.
So Jaws gave you a genuine fear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm part of the generation that, like, you know, it's genuinely affected by that movie.
And yet it's still your favourite film.
Because of that.
Because like, it evoked that emotion deep inside you.
How many films can actually force, like, something like that? Like, that's mental.
Yeah. Are the only films that scare me, like... are the ones where it's like people get possessed and shit and they get all bent up and it's filmed on like actual cameras and that.
They're the ones that don't scare me at all because it's unrealistic. That Jaws is way scarier for the realism.
Yeah, do you like...
What's your fear of people getting bent up and shit?
Being possessed.
You know when like you see it's like this really happened in America and there's like some woman and it's like usually like a nun with an upside down cross on her and then she'll like a spine will snap and then she'll float up and that. Like, you know, just being possessed, Alex, basically.
If that isn't a movie, it should be.
It's a movie that I'm writing.
I'm just painting a picture. What I've got is a nun with an upside down cross and someone's spine snaps and they float up.
Fucking, yeah. That's a movie that I'm writing.
Who would you get to play the nun?
Anyone. Anyone. Oh, yeah, anyone that's up for the part. Margot Robbie, right? And you can be in it as well, right? And then me and Fiona will buy a ticket, definitely, for different reasons. We are going to play a little game of Clash of the Titles.
Okay.
But we could, because we don't really know much about films, we haven't really picked a common denominator between the two films.
What there's
we
want something. To do.
Yeah, we're going to have five rounds, and we're going to tell you. They're some of my favourite movies, they're some of Stevie's favourite movies, and you have to tell us which one you think is the better movie.
Okay.
And we'll obviously have a winner, because it's an odd number. Right, now we'll go for the first one first, because I think it's obvious, because we've already spoken about it.
Okay, so our common denominator in this one is an outstanding performance from the main actor. So not necessarily the films aren't similar at all, but I wanted my film in there and we couldn't find anything else to match it with. So you go for...
We'll tell you who's who on this one, because you're going to know. Mine was Joker.
Right.
And mine was Ray.
Okay. Which do I think is the better film in that instance?
Yeah.
Personally, I prefer Joker.
Oh, Joker, okay.
I think Ray's great and Jamie Foxx is fantastic in it, but, you know, Joaquin Phoenix in Joker is a revelation.
Mm, phenomenal. I've never seen Ray. I feel like I need to watch it.
Oh, it's you
bang on about, but you bang on about it a lot, but you're one of the only people that I hear bang on about it. So I'm thinking, is it a shit movie that you love?
I like Ray Charles.
Is it a good movie, Alex?
It is a good movie, yeah. It's a great movie and a great performance.
Jamie Foxx got an Oscar for it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, so I'd like to think it's fairly good.
Okay, fair enough. Sold.
You know, those things they hand out for really, really good.
Those little gold men.
And the other thing I like about it is that in those kind of biopics, normally you don't get the main actor singing it or play, and he's playing the piano, he is singing. Like, it's like he is...
Wow.
Doing all of that.
Yeah. I found out a cool movie fact last night. You know, in Fight Club, Jared Leto's in that. There's Brad Pitt says to him at one point that we're all conditioned to believe that the things we see on TV are what we will become. We won't become millionaires, movie stars, or rock stars. And he says it to Jared Leto, which I thought was fucking cool.
Because he's become all three.
All three, yeah. The next one, so it's 1-0 me.
All right, I'm ready for a 5-0 thrashing.
The next one,
do you believe in the rest of these choices that are yours? I'm feeling that you don't. So I feel like
I like this one. Okay. It's comparison wise,
we've got a Tarantino battle now.
Right,
Are you a Tarantino fan?
Like Tarantino, yeah. Yeah, I made him cry once.
Come on, then.
you can't say that and not tell
Let
us.
Me just recline this seat.
Yeah, no, it was the weirdest thing. I've never had it before. And we were chatting, and I was like, what does it mean to you? Christoph Waltz had just been nominated for his second Oscar for Django Unchained. Mm. And he'd obviously won for Inglourious Bastards. And I was like, to Tarantino, I was like, what does it feel like to you as the man who has written two roles specifically for Christoph Waltz, and he's won one Oscar and been nominated for a second for your writing and your relationship with him as an actor and you as the writer? And he just went, I've just never heard it put like that. I've never heard it put like that. And I'm like, are you crying because I've said you're great?
So Tarantino. Django versus Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, that's a tough one. I haven't seen Reservoir Dogs in years. I think, honestly, oh God, wow, tough one, because Reservoir Dogs is like was my introduction to Tarantino. Django Unchained is fucking brilliant. I think for pure enjoyment, no, Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah!
God's
sake! 2-0. It's one of my favourite films ever.
Yeah, it's a great film. It's a great film. Stop pointing that gun at my dad! Love that bit.
The next one is, I don't know what the comparison,
Big Twist.
Oh, okay.
They both have quite a big twist in them.
Read them out, son.
We've got Gone Girl versus The Prestige.
Oh.
We're assuming you've seen all of these.
Yeah, no, I have seen. I've seen both of those. These are really good choices. Did you pick them together or did you pick them individually and bring them
separately?
Together?
And then we tried to find the. That's why Joker and Ray was a bit. I think different. One's a biopic, biopic. Yeah, however you say it.
No, it's weird. I had an argument with someone on Twitter about that. Not that I have arguments on Twitter very often. And I know you do. someone was like, "Can you stop fucking calling it a biopic? It's a biopic." And I'm like,
fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Then I said biopic a lot more. So I'm going to go with Gone Girl, I think.
I'm just going to leave. 3-0. 3-0.
But The Prestige is phenomenal.
Not seen it.
A lot of people are going to, if anyone's a movie fan, it's arguable that I've made the wrong decision, but personally, I just love Gone Girl. Mm. I love Fincher.
The Prestige is one of my favourite films ever, but I love Gone Girl as well, so it was a hard one to go up against, but that's all right.
Do you want two more chances
to lose? We're fine.
Well, you can't bring it back, but we'll do them anyway. It's not hot enough in here, is it? So the next one is a comedy versus a comedy. That's the only common denominator there. The Hangover.
Okay.
For the first one versus Life of Brian.
Wow. I love The Hangover. And Life of Brian is a classic. I mean, I think I'm going to have to. I love The Hangover. It hasn't dated well. If you rewatch The Hangover now, there are some questionable moments in that.
Yeah, I watched it the other week.
Mm. Mm. I don't know that Bradley Cooper now would make a movie which opens with him going paging Dr. Faggot.
Yeah.
I think that's a big ask now. So I'm going to go Life of Brian.
Oh, you pull one back.
There it is.
Pull one back. And the last one, musicals. Star is Born versus Greatest Showman.
I am one of those people that absolutely loved The Greatest Showman. And it's a fascinating story because it flopped on release and then it just stayed around. People are insane about that movie. And Hugh Jackman is one of the nicest guys in show business. And
so what you're saying there is Bradley Cooper's a bastard. That's the title of the podcast, Katie, please. Thank you.
I sat down with Hugh Jackman, and we were sat in this cinema at Sky Cinema / Movies, and they have this huge cinema there, and we sat there and watched all his favourite musical moments. And I've never seen a guy sort of forget. He loves musicals so much. I've never seen a guy forget he was being interviewed, because I'm like, so tell me about this movie. He's like, Alex, shut up. Just watch this bit. And he does this thing where he claps his hands together and points to the screen. He's like, look at that. Look at that. And I'm like, yeah. So when did you first watch? Yeah, hang on, this bit. And I'm like, wow, this is great. But he fucking loves his musicals and he's lovely. So The Greatest Showman.
Oh, wow.
Look at that.
That was like me when I was showing you my videos the other day. Like, look at this bit. Look how I call this person a cunt.
So Jack, have you got any for shut up?
Oh, cool. I've had a lot of fun today. It's been good.
Too. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Welcome back on whenever you want, sir.
Were your notes of use?
Didn't take any notes. notes. Let us know what. Yeah, tell us what notes you've done. Come on.
They're not great. I mean, as you can see, I thought I did my research because I thought you'd be like, so YouTube.
Didn't actually talk about YouTube at all. Yeah.
What do you know about YouTube? And I was like, I was going to be the old man of the show and sort of go, I still enjoyed it when YouTube was in its infancy. Sneezing Panda's very funny.
Oh, my God. Fucking hell. But you had to cover all of that stuff for YouTube, didn't you?
Well, exactly, yeah. Mm. That's, you know, when we started, we started in 2006, so it'd only been on, only been active for, what, a year? So,
oh, wow.
So, yeah, we were, the very first YouTube was 2006, YouTube rather.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it was all that stuff that now... I was interested to know, like, whether they've all fallen out of, like, the most popular videos or whether just time means that the ones that were big then have carried on being the biggest videos, like the evolution of dance and all
that.
Yeah,
I bet that would have, that's probably fallen off a cliff.
The only one, because I was fascinated to find out that I went through the top 50 videos on YouTube that are non-music videos, and, like, the top 25 are all... like nursery rhymes for fucking kids.
Yeah.
It's like 4 billion views for nursery rhymes.
If we ever have you on again, I want to make a point of actually just having a big discussion about YouTube, because I bet I could tell you some stuff that would blow your mind.
It would.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated. I wish I'd learned more. So there you go. That's the only problem I have, that I don't feel I learned as much as I'd hoped to, and these notes were worthless.
We could have carried on chatting for a lot longer, but I mean, it's fucking boiling in here.
So
we'll call it a day. But Alex, it's been an absolute pleasure. Clash of the titles. keep one of the same titles. out on all good podcast providers, I believe, isn't it?
So go
check that out. We like to finish on the same question for season 4. Alex Zane, what is the meaning of life?
The meaning of life is have a good time all the time.
Lovely. There we go. This has been Jack Mate's Happy Hour. Thanks for joining us. I've been Jack Mate. He's been Stevie. And that man over there has been Tom Cruise's best mate. So we'll see you next week. Jack Mate's Happy Hour.
This was a Stakhanov production.